From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
And I am Ben. Most importantly, you are you, we hope, which makes this, as always, stuff they don't want you to know. Ladies and gentlemen, before we get to anything else, before we start the show, we want to do something very important, and that is...
Shout Out Corner.
That's right. It is the return of our Shout Out Corner. And the first person to get a shout out today is our own Jake Hanrahan, who asked us on Twitter, "Hey guys, do you still do shout outs?" We do, Jake, or we do for you. So welcome. You are officially a member of the Shout Out Corner. Anybody else, Matt?
You got shouted out. So did you, Heather. You're getting shouted out for saying things while you are apparently intoxicated that are hilarious on Twitter. Thank you.
So, we are going to continue our shout out corner. If you would like to have your name read on the air, if you would like to say hi to us, or if you would like us to convey a message to your fellow listeners, there are a couple ways to do it. You could take a page from Jake and Heather's book and follow us on twitter.com/conspiracy stuff.
Or you can just take a page from the Noel Brown book and just be a buddy of mine by the name of Wesley Vaughn, who I turned on to the show recently, and I wanted to give him a little shouty-outy.
Oh, yes. Shout out to Wesley as well. And so, you know, I think three are good for a shout out corner.
Yeah,
right?
It's a corner. So, it's not a room.
Yeah, so
it's not a room. It's just the corner.
It's just a corner. With that, as always, thank you to Wesley, Jake, and Heather for checking out the show. Thank you to everyone else. All you guys out there listening, again, we can't emphasize it enough. Our best ideas come from you. We're also on Facebook. We have, what else do we have, guys? We have a live show.
We do. We do Periscope. You can find us there, Periscope TV.
Even though Facebook doesn't want you to know.
That's true. But Facebook will let you know about our Facebook Live posts.
Mm-hmm. We alternate. Yeah, we go back and forth. And our last one was kind of cool because this is a little bit behind the scenes, but Noel, Matt, and I hung out with a future special guest, who is a super cool guy. I'm like his number one cheerleader, actually, but
he is simultaneously one of the most mysterious individuals that I've ever met. But at the same time, I feel like I could just sit and talk with him and he has the knowledge of a professor.
Put it this way. The conversation over lunch veered wildly from alchemy to philosophy, all kinds of esoteric thought to, you know, the Fallout series and Dungeons and Dragons rules.
So, yeah, you know, that's true.
Quite a wide swath. I enjoy myself immensely. Looking forward to having him on the show.
Yeah, this is a friend of mine from a long time ago. But enough about that. You will meet him soon because we are going to talk about something different today, which might sound a little bit strange for some of our listeners because we usually cover stuff like cryptids. Oh, and spoiler alert, you guys, I really want to do some cryptids soon.
Yeah, if I am so ready to cover cryptids. We just have to find the new ones.
Yeah, the ones we haven't covered yet.
You guys, I think that sounds like a terrible idea.
Get out of here.
No.
Stop arguing. So you guys may have noticed that last week we did a little episode on political conspiracies, which is one of those things. I think it's politics, religion, and money. Those are the three things
that you shouldn't talk about at dinner
or at a bar. Yeah.
Well, we found out in our YouTube comment section in our videos, specifically in this one, a lot of comments, a lot of people just attacking each other, arguing with each other, and it kind of made us want to look into this further.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. And we do want to say that we really appreciate everybody who took the time to check out our YouTube video and to check out our earlier audio episode. We were surprised, you guys. We thought we would get just excoriated in comments and stuff because we talked about political things. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people seemed pretty on board.
Yeah, there were a lot of people just disagreeing with each other in what they were writing in the comments rather than what was actually in the video.
We do try to be as unbiased as we can, or to be biased toward facts rather than our own opinions. And that's one where I spectacularly broke the rule. I went on a rant. Yeah.
I think that was a first in our video series, at least.
I think it was a first, but be that as it may, Matt, the point you make is excellent. And we're going to get to, some listener feedback later regarding our political stuff. So stay tuned for that toward the end. But the point that Matt is making now is that we saw arguments. We saw a lot of arguments and we started thinking, why do people argue online? Why does it seem like there are always a couple people who are, no matter what the video is or mm-hmm. what the story is, there's always like one or two people who are fighting, and it could be something as innocuous as like a cute overweight cat who is pushing a cup off a table, or like a puppy that is booping another puppy. And there's somebody in the comments who's always going like, hey, f you, buddy.
Exactly.
Yeah, it ranges pretty widely. And it's a weird thing, right?
You know where I've found some of the most just completely livid, cantankerous arguments online?
Where's
it? On local newspapers' websites. So especially in the South, because people have a tendency to really let their Confederate flags fly, shall we say.
You know, that is a weird thing. I noticed that in looking up a couple articles in smaller newspapers online, the comment sections that you have to scroll all the way down the page to find are just filled with people yelling and saying horrible things to each other.
Vitriol.
Who goes there to like have a discussion?
Well, it's like a spoken word open mic night. The only people who are going to watch are also the people who want to perform.
Uh-huh.
So people.
It's a very, very good analogy.
It's kind of cruel to spoken word. And I am a fan of spoken word. That's just a reality.
Well, that's true of any kind of open mic night for the most part. I mean, you know, if you've got someone playing acoustic guitar, you know, singing Bob Dylan covers, I mean, it's sort of a contract, you know, if you got to watch the other people doing the Bob Dylan covers before you get your turn to do yours.
Right. So. And stand up open mic nights for comics are tough because, you know, comics hate to laugh at each other's jokes.
Oh, that's funny.
It's like walking into a church where everyone is angry.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So what's the point?
Why
do we do this? Well, it's a great question. This makes us think because we must explore the nature of an argument itself before we get to the strange world of arguing online. So the nature of argument is this. Matt, Noel, me, or every guest host we've ever had, you listening here, and every single person you have ever met, probably, I'm 99% certain, everyone you have ever met is hardwired to prize feeling correct over being correct.
Yes.
And that's a very important distinction, right?
There are some chemical reasons for that we're going to get into, but right. It's something you need to know.
Yeah. And evolutionary reasons as well. So everyone's had some sort of argument. It doesn't matter who you are. You've had some sort of argument. One of the nicest people I know is a local Atlanta improviser named Mark Kendall. Super nicest guy, but it doesn't matter if he would never himself start an argument. He lives in an argumentative world, right? So think of, you know, the nicest person you know probably had an argument at some point, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my roommate Frank, for example, and the funny thing is he and I both used to live with a mutual friend of ours who is just, he lives for arguing. He will make his point and will never back down from it, no matter what information you throw at him. He's never wrong, and he's good at it because he makes you feel like you have to meet his burden of proof. And then he constantly is just like raising the bar.
Clever.
And it's very clever and it's infuriating, but you can't help but engage when he does this.
You play his reindeer games.
I do. And so, you know, Frank's got a little bit of that every now and then. Well, but you know, the thing about Frank is he will back down, but sometimes it'll be like, you know, maybe something as simple as, this is the lyric to this song. I'm like, that's not the right lyric. And, you know, we'll kind of go back and forth for a while, and then eventually someone will look it up and end it there.
And history hinges on arguments. Arguments have caused wars. Arguments have caused changes of government. Arguments have propelled some of the greatest innovations of our species. And those we can group under rivalries more so, right? Like Edison and Tesla, for instance. If they didn't have such enormous abiding contempt for one another, would they have explored technology the way they did? I think the answer is no. I think they would have explored something differently. So argument is not necessarily bad. Everyone has it. This has probably happened to you recently when you were doing something else between the time you listened to our last show and the time you're listening now. You may have argued over something in our last show for sure. So what do you do? How do you handle this when this happens? Do you embrace conflict or does even the thought of an awkward social situation send you into anxiety land like Mark Corrigan on Peep Show, you know, which is again, I think Noel mentioned it earlier.
So, he's my spirit animal.
He's your spirit animal. Well, at least you're not Jez. So despite the name Homo sapien, modern wise person, we are biologically ill-equipped for the times in which we live. We are Betamaxes in a Blu-ray world, which is totally inaccurate. I just like the way it sounds.
I like it.
And it's like outdated technology.
So outdated. It's like crazy outdated.
But the funny thing is, I mean, they're almost both outdated.
Yeah, that's the thing. It sounds good, but Blu-rays are also outdated.
Kind of.
So the thing is that the evolution of our technological capability and the evolution of our social dynamic across the world, they've outpaced the biological evolution, the biological adaptations that made human beings so suited to that fight or die brutal grind of the ancient natural world in which we lived. We evolved cognitively and physically to outrun, outfight, or outwit predators and monsters in the world around us. However, now we're in a different world.
Now the threats aren't so much, you know, a tiger coming at you, let's say, or a bear that you have to fend off to save your family or something. They're much more slow. They're more existential. They're on paper a lot of times.
Yeah, what are some of the terrors of the modern world for people in developed countries, we should say? They're or people who are well off, the things are like, am I leaving a legacy? Is WebMD right?
Do I have enough of these hoodies that I like, you know, so I don't have to wash them all the time?
Can I get good tickets for that concert, or are they only bad? Are there only bad tickets left?
You know? And there are real ones too, like ones that are coming up, like in the current political movements that we're seeing in, like, how do governments function? Right. Even though that's a large question, it's something that affects all of us that we have to think about, but it's not something that you can fight against, that you can fight or flight. Right.
Well, it's also another thing that's becoming more and more just part of a daily concern is threats of, you know, attacks, terrorist attacks, for example. I mean, obviously we've been dealing with that in our culture for a long time, but for me personally, and also having a child, I feel like it's definitely more in the forefront of my mind. Like, I went to a political event last year and was standing in line, and the thought occurred to me going in, like, you know what? Someone could try to blow this thing up. Yeah, this could be it. And it was very strange because I'd never had that thought before. And it was very, like, a marked kind of moment. Like, okay, I guess this is how my brain works now.
And that is how our brains have always handled the world around us, as a constant, background noise of threat. Music. You know, the music that plays in Kill Bill right before the bride does anything? Your brain is always on some level playing that music at a very low level, but it's because our hardwiring, however antiquated it is, got us here by being that way. So it was very, very useful in the past. It is still useful. Otherwise people wouldn't have it. But what this means is that our brains treat every innocuous argument like it could potentially be a fight to the death. So for instance, what's the most innocuous argument? Like, the dumbest little thing to argue with someone about? Like, if you guys were arguing.
I had an argument one time about shoes.
I was about to say shoes.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That was the most innocuous argument I could have thought of.
A mutual friend of ours, Bree, and I got into a huge argument one time about the need for new, like, really expensive shoes and about how I only had one pair of shoes.
I that was exactly the thing that I was going to say.
We'll see. There you go.
That's weird.
You guys have group mind.
Well, mine was going to be a hypothetical.
Oh, okay.
I actually had this argument, but that was literally going to be what it was. That's very strange.
Well, so, okay. So even if it's this question about new exclusive Jordans, or if it's a question about what sort of shoes are best suited to what sort of event, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if you have a horse in the race, if you have a badger in the bag on this one, then your brain is going to treat it as though it potentially will be a situation where you have to thunderdome it and one of you is going to die. And it's an unconscious thing. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is why Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is covering the topic of argument, because it's not the kind of thing we would usually cover, right?
I think this falls in line really well with the Deceptive Brain series that mm-hmm. we did.
Yeah. And that's because the question is always, who are they mm-hmm. in this context? Well, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, future potential foes, this is, depending on how you feel about Jordans, this is a situation where the they are you, or at least your brain, your brains, and the ancient eldritch processes that compel us to mistake our programming for free will. And so now that we know that the game is rigged with regular arguments, let's take it a step further. You know what I mean? Let's look at technology. What is it like when you can argue with someone that you will never have to meet in real life? Do you guys have a story?
Okay, I have a really quick story to tell. And it, I think, matches up where the real world and then the avatar that you are when you're speaking or typing online kind of meet. So there's this game in 1997 when I was in middle school called Ultima Online.
Okay.
And it was really cool. It was a new game and you could do all these things. Well, I spent way too much time playing this game. I got a character to 7XGM. Which means,
what does that mean?
Seven times Grandmaster. You have seven skills that are at 100, which takes forever. And I mean, really, we're talking, I don't know, 6 to 8 months that I spent on this one character. And I bought a boat. I got all this stuff. Like I was riding high back in middle school. I was like, oh man, this is awesome. So anyway, they made a change to the game where in certain spaces, you weren't safe anymore. Someone could take things from you, pickpocket you, right? Mm-hmm. Or even attack you, and the guards wouldn't come or whatever. Anyway, I got pickpocketed, and my boat got stolen with all my stuff. And I basically was going to rage quit the game, but there was this function inside the game where you could call a GM, a game master, also GM, that's weird. But anyway, you could call them, and it was a human sitting at their computer who was like helping run the game, who would come in a character and talk to you. And this character came up and I basically, as this little kid, was arguing for about 25, 30 minutes, yelling like vitriol about how could this happen. I spent all this time. I love this game. Please get my boat back. Help me. This sucks. And then I said awful things to this person because I was like so furious. Now I don't even remember exactly what I wrote to the guy, but it was just in text coming up in a little bubble above my character's head.
Well, that's important to remember too, is, you know, there's no context in text. That seems funny to say.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's like it just comes across like you have one side of the meaning of the words because you're missing an entire incredibly important component, which is your body language, the tone of your voice, mm-hmm. the sound of your voice, the oscillations of your volume up and down, things like that. And a lot of people talk with their hands and there's just a whole nuance that's missing from online conversation. And it can work both ways. It can either make you come off as extra mean mm-hmm. or, you know, people get confused. Maybe you're saying something that's meant to be a joke. And if you had heard someone say it in their voice, it would be very clear they were being sarcastic or that it was a joke. But when you type it mm-hmm. out and there's none of those nuances, it's very easy to mistake it as someone being a jerk.
Now, that's one of the primary differences between most online interactions versus real life interactions. Another one would be that everyone in an online interaction has the ability to pretend to be more knowledgeable than they are by opening another tab, Google's at your fingertips.
Especially now. Back then, I was on a dial-up on AOL, mm-hmm. and that's how I was connecting through.
Did you get your boat back?
Yeah, did you?
No, I did not get my boat back.
This explains a lot about, like, you.
Because I never got my boat back.
You've just been pining for that boat.
Yeah, well, your boat hurt.
It is funny though how I transferred my anger and my rage at from that guy, from the person who stole my stuff, to this game master who
completely
had nothing
innocent.
To do with it. Yeah, completely
the equivalent of yelling at someone on like Comcast customer support or something.
Exactly. Has nothing to do with it. It's just my job to help out, but I can't deal with you right now.
And I would say that's a little bit different because the person who was bearing the brunt of the frustration was paid to be there. And was not passionately telling you that you had to have better shoes or something.
Absolutely.
So because we are, as we said, hardwired for survival, let's look a little bit at what happens in these online arguments. When you are in situations with high stress or you have fear or you're suspicious, there's a hormone called cortisol, which floods your brain. And when this happens, All the cool cognitive neighborhoods in the front of your brain, like all the hip new up and coming areas, evolutionarily speaking, they don't function as well. These would be executive functions. They're like strategy, trust building, empathy, compassion. And instead, one of Noel's favorite parts of the brain kicks in, and that is the amygdala. This is the part that makes a choice about how best to protect the body. And this thing, which is a very old part of your brain, is the one that says, all right, look, body, we are very close to losing it all in this dangerous, dangerous game of Russian roulette that we confused with a pleasant conversation. We have several choices. We can fight, possibly to the death. We can run as fast as we can. We can freeze. Or we can try to kiss their butt. I don't know what'll work better for you. But your brain usually is gonna say fight or flee.
Yes. The I like that idea of a strategic butt kiss that your brain decides to make.
And this is just for arguments when you're arguing with someone you don't know that well or you don't have that much of a stake in there. You know, this is an argument where maybe Noel meet somebody in line to grab lunch or something, and they just say something very offensive, and you say, well, hold on though. That's not true, actually, because blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, look at McBeardy over here.
Look at the pants on this guy.
Some
big boy pants he got there.
I love the idea that all of a sudden everything just stops in time. Noel turns around and then you just hear that. And all of a sudden, it's a fight to the death.
What is that?
It's the Star Trek.
Yeah, that's also me calling all my bearded compatriots to come back.
I knew you guys traveled in packs.
True.
I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to be open with my prejudices.
That's okay.
But it's like, why are there always those like other 11 guys hanging out waiting for you?
Can't tell you the secret.
I've literally never seen you walking in a pack of less than 12 bearded men.
You know, there's safety in numbers, my friend.
I guess
safety
so.
Safety in numbers.
Well, it looks good. I think
we're going to have to find more out about
yeah,
that.
We'll have to. That's a different episode.
Well, here's what you do. You just grow your beard out a little bit, and then maybe we'll welcome you into the fold.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm ready.
I'm in.
Okay. Cool.
Traitor. So, but let's say, going back to this hypothetical situation, Noel, let's say that you are in a long-standing argument, a deep-seated rivalry, one of those arguments that has continued for some reason for years and years and years, and will never reach a conclusion. In fact, it's further and further away from a conclusion. You have like some Edison Tesla kind of deep-seated disgust for one another. Well, it turns out your brain functions in an even stranger way at that point. Now your brain has gone from sort of betraying you by making you a little bit dumber to, or a little bit less rational is a more fair way to say it. To giving you a little bit of something that might be like a mad genius superpower. So in this study at the University College of London, a guy named Professor Semir Zeki scanned the brains of these test subjects as they looked at photos of someone they hated. And I still don't know how they got these photos.
Yeah.
I guess the person said, oh, I hate this person.
It must have been celebrities or something, right? That they
I don't know.
Say they hate.
Well, I mean, the methodology is in the study. And it's fairly sound. So, Professor Zeki found that Everyone's brain has what he called a hate circuit, and it connects three regions, the superior frontal gyrus, the putamen, and the medial insula. The activity in these regions correlates with the experience of hate. So if someone says to you, like, oh, I don't, who's a celebrity?
Ryan Gosling.
Okay, so if someone says to you, no, I don't hate Ryan Gosling, you can check to see if they're telling the truth by showing them a picture of Ryan Gosling and seeing if the superior frontal gyrus, putamen, and the medial insula have a higher level of activity. That means they hate this guy.
I love the idea of walking up to someone in the street and be like, do you hate Ryan Gosling? No, no, no. Hold on. Attach all of the necessary equipment.
Or anyone. And this circuit is distinct. It includes parts of the cortex, subcortex, that generate aggressive behavior and translate this into action through motor planning, which means like a very small individual size version of war games modeling, strategic modeling. If then, right? If they swing first, I'm going to duck.
Yep.
I'm going to put a foot up in their groin or something like that.
I had that with a couple kids in middle school because of my dorkiness. Like, there are those kids that you think about, how am I going to react if you're, a bully, I guess, something like that. Did you guys ever have something like that where you have just planning on how am I going to interact with this person next time? And if then,
in order to keep yourself from being bullied,
or yes, yes.
To like a good zinger
to get a, okay. Like, I guess why a comedian learns to be a comedian at a young age, right? That's right. The kind of thing.
Yes. This is something that I'm sure a lot of people do. And, listeners, we're collectively a pretty diverse group. The three of us here in the studio, everybody out there listening and writing in and helping us find the next episode of a show. So some of you are doubtlessly in middle school right now, or in high school right now. Maybe, I don't think there's anybody younger than middle school age listening to the show. So, some of you are in maybe middle school, high school right now, and you're aware, you've seen this kind of stuff happen before. I hope you are not bullying anybody. I also hope you're not being bullied, but it is a true skill. And it's one of those, abstract cognitive superpowers that separates humanity from most, but not all, other animals. And here's the thing about when you really hate someone, we did this in our Deceptive Brain series. All right. When you're in love, you have less activity in the parts of your brain that have objectivity and judgment. So like, you've seen one of your friends date someone who's just an absolute piece of garbage. And they're like, oh no, Donovan or Samantha or whatever is just going through a lot. They need a little money, but their heart's in the right place. And, they love their three kids, but they can't talk to them because of their schedule. And they're like, Donovan or Samantha or whomever doesn't sound like the most up and up character, right? And they're like, but no, I love him, or, I love her, or whatever.
I think we've all been in those situations.
Yeah, that's almost another coping mechanism that your brain sort of, circumvents, common or rational thought by allowing you to kind of explain away some of these pretty deal breaking shortcomings.
So even though the circuit for hate is distinct, it has a little bit in common. It runs in some of the same circles as the love circuit, which we cover in that, Deceptive Brain video, with one really important difference. Brains experiencing hate retain activity in the objectivity and judgment areas, which means you are better prepared not only to plan your next move, but to calculate the next move of your opponent. This does not happen when you are just arguing with some random stranger on the internet. This happens to people that you hate. So if you have this kind of experience, it can keep you smart. Which in terms of maybe cunning is a better word, right? So does this apply online? We did a video earlier where we talked about why you cannot win arguments online. And, you know, I'm sure there are loads of folks out here listening who are thinking, like I used to think, well, I did actually win several arguments online, Ben. So if you want to argue about it, check out, you know, check out your email, right?
Look at this thread.
Mm-hmm. However, Noel, you named one of the biggest reasons that it's difficult to win an argument online when you said body language, right?
Sure.
Body language is missing.
Yeah. And I also think that, like, I mean, there's no moderator in an online argument. So, I mean, everyone kind of walks away feeling the same way as they did when they went in, you know, like no one ever really gets their mind changed. Or, and since there's no neutral third party mm-hmm. to say, you know, X or Y won the debate. It's just all about mudslinging and just it devolves usually into just personal insults because essentially you're missing more than half of what people are actually saying when you cut out the ability to interpret their body language, their intonation, the sound of their voice, like I was saying earlier.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into this because there's a little bit of myth busting we need to do, but there's also a little bit of revelatory stuff we need to show people here. Because we have some numbers on this.
You've probably heard this before. Research shows only about 40% of what we're actually saying matters. People are paying more attention to your body language, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Lately, that's actually been amended pretty significantly to say 55% of communication is actually body language. 38% is the tone of voice. And 7%.
Wow.
Yeah, measly 7.
The actual words.
So, okay, so does this measure up? Let's look at this. The history behind these numbers, they're often quoted and the percentages are often misunderstood. They come from a guy named Albert Mehrabian. Albert Mehrabian is responsible for this breakdown, right? And he did a lot of research detailing the importance of nonverbal communication channels. Right. Because we've seen people who speak very seldomly, but they are still being very talkative, for lack of a better term, in the ways in which they carry themselves. Right. We have a couple of coworkers who speak rarely, but, mm-hmm. Still communicate very well. So. This number comes from two different research studies, both in the 60s, and they combined together, to modify that 60% nonverbal, 40% verbal thing into the 55, 38, and 7, because they figured out that intonation does matter that much, right? Sarcasm, still is very difficult for people to read based on text alone.
There are some ways that you can get around some of the sarcasm and some of those things now. I know on like Twitch in particular, they've actually come up with an emoji that when you're being sarcastic, you throw the emoji somewhere in the message, which is kind of an interesting way that communication is evolving. I think eventually there will be something that you'll be able to denote sarcasm simply with a click or something.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, or, you know, for example, using an exclamation point. Where when an exclamation point was missing, a sentence might come off as demure or like sounding like, you know, you're not very enthusiastic about something. Mm-hmm. But if you add that exclamation point, maybe two or three, then the person that you're chatting with or texting with, you know, knows that you're being upbeat about something. I mean, there's all kinds of little workarounds, not to mention all of the emojis that, you know, we have access to just like through, you know, Androids and iPhones.
But that is if the other person that you're speaking with understands those symbols and those messages that you're trying to get across, because ultimately Absolutely. It's just characters.
And this leads into something that's an interesting bit of history, which I'll probably pitch to Holly and Tracy over at Stuff You Missed in History Class, one of our peer podcasts. There have been numerous attempts to create new punctuation characters that denote stuff, like an interrobang, which is a question mark, but also an exclamation point, or nice. An irony mark, or a mark to donate sarcasm. However, these haven't really caught on. So at this point, we're stuck with clarity of communication. The big misunderstanding about this 55-38-7 rule is that it is a hard and fast rule all the time. That doesn't make sense because people communicate so differently across the world. What it does show us is that in any instance, how you're saying what you're saying and what you're doing with your body while you say it matters way more than people might think.
Also, intent has a lot to do with it. Like, for example, an internet troll is communicating for the sole purpose of riling people up. Mm-hmm. So not only will they use language and phrasing in such a way that will ruffle people, they're actually being very pointed and targeted in what they're saying and creating these argumentative threads. And a lot of times you'll see message boards where, you know, there's somebody on there and is later identified as a troll only after like people kind of react and say, oh, you idiot, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You're so full of it. Blah. And then someone will be like, he got old, you know, XYZ 2016 gotcha or whatever, you know, I mean, it's a thing. You see it all the time.
And they're a little bit different, I think, in the chemical processes that occur in the brain during trolling, because it's not, the point is not to win an argument. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The point is to, derive some other sort of cathartic thing.
That's true. And so, and do you think people enter into online arguments really believing that they're going to win? Like, do you think we delude ourselves into believing that we're actually have a chance of changing someone's mind?
Sometimes one thing that I think may even be more common is when people are, okay, so imagine a person is like a cup and the fluid that a person is filled up with is a belief. Right. Maybe that belief is something like, the best video game ever was, GTA, or that, jazz music stinks except for this one album. Right. So, or that, you know, my religion is right. If we want to go to that point. So this person, this cup is filled with this fluid of belief, and this fluid, you know, like any other fluid, adheres to the, it conforms to the shape of its container. And then when it overflows, maybe an event happens in the news, that's like an ice cube or something dropping in, and that raises the fluid, and then it starts to pour over into the outside world. So I'm trying to be very kind when I say this, but my instinct says that often people just want to express the thing they already believe rather than think critically about it. So maybe you've grown up hearing that the only real metal is Cradle of Filth, right? Okay. I don't want to get in trouble with the metal audience. This is just for the sake of argument. So you as a cup have been filled with this thing that says only metal is Cradle of Filth. The only metal is Cradle of Filth.
Sort of
only
a, metal sort of is a murky cradle of fluid. Filth.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and by going out and saying it, like, mm-hmm. like just going out in the world in some, even if it's just on a little online forum somewhere and saying that, it's almost like you're trying to reinforce your own belief.
Yes. And you're attempting to find like-minded people so you guys can all sit together and say, the only metal is Cradle of Filth. The only metal is Cradle of Filth. And the reason this happens, and this is a very crude analogy, but the reason this happens is because of kind of a tribalistic pack mentality. And we are much more like, synthesizing creatures than we are original thinkers. So we take stuff that has already existed in our cup and we just let the cup overfloweth. You know what I mean? We're not actually making the thoughts in many cases. So you can also see these online arguments that are very impassioned as proxy wars, because someone who didn't actually invent the thought just heard it so much they believed it was true. Heard it so much they believed it was true. They end up just being kind of a puppet of a pre-existing opinion to another puppet of a pre-existing opinion. And it's a sad thing, but it's a reality. Another reason you can't win a lot of arguments online is that the act of arguing tends to reinforce those pre-existing opinions. So if I am a cup and I'm overflowing with the only metal is Cradle of Filth, and then Matt, you or you, Noel, or you listeners say, well, technically I looked up the definition of metal. And while Cradle of Filth may be your favorite of this genre and its many subgenres, it is factually inaccurate to say that it is the only example. So confronted with the facts, what would I do?
Well, do we have those three options from earlier in the show?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Fight, flight.
Four, actually.
Freeze.
Or appease. I don't know if people would appease. It's rare for people to roll over and show their belly in online interactions.
Very true.
because, you know, there's such anonymity. And well, here's what Brendan Nyhan and a guy named Jason Reifler discovered. They discovered something they called the backfire effect, which means that if you guys had like a metal intervention with me and said, here are several other metal albums. Furthermore, here's some albums that if you like Cradle of Filth, you will probably enjoy immensely. Mm-hmm. And if I still thought that same thought just running like an earworm through my head, then what I would end up doing is saying, no, no, you guys are wrong. We're not friends. You don't know what you're talking about. You're offensive. You're stupid. Downvote, dislike, unsub.
And the funny thing is like, you know, you can get away with that stuff online, I guess, because no one's really trying to be your friend. But, you know, if a buddy of yours kept behaving that way, you'd probably find a new buddy, you know? I mean, just, I'm not saying that everyone has to be the same, but when people just are inherently closed-minded and closed off to any other possibilities other than what they believe to be the case, it's just not any fun to talk to them, you know? It's just not. I mean, even if you're into arguing, that gets old real quick, you know, especially about something as arbitrary as, you know, Cradle of Filth is the only metal.
It's making me think of the concept that thoughts can be viral or are, in a way, neural memes. Viruses.
Mimetic, yeah.
Yeah, and some of the, it kind of takes me back to The Invisibles and Filth and some of the work of Grant Morrison, just some of the ideas that if you have a thought that is dangerous enough and you are able to spread it, the thought itself is the thing that is dangerous, not whatever comes of it.
Right. Does the thought function as a sentient being?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. And it's something that we've talked about off air, which, you know, I would love to explore in a future episode too, because we're already at this situation where the evidence or the truth of whatever something might be doesn't necessarily matter. The backfire effect is related to confirmation bias. Confirmation bias, of course, where if you think of yourself as a skeptic and you say, if you think of yourself as a skeptic, then you should be saying, I am interested to hear about this UFO report and see what, if anything, is anomalous about it. Many people who confuse themselves with skeptics practice confirmation bias and say, aliens are not real, or I heard the term conspiracy theory, therefore whatever follows after this is automatically wrong. If anything, that's the opposite of skepticism. So in a situation where the evidence or the truth doesn't necessarily matter, when people on any conversation from closely held personal values like religion or politics to very arbitrary stuff like Anchorman 1 versus Anchorman 2 or Pepsi versus Coke or whatever. What we find is that, again, our brains are hardwired to prize feeling correct over being correct, even when there's not really a correct answer. Like, I don't know how you guys feel, but if it's a soda, it's a soda, it's a soda. You might have your favorite, but I don't think there's an inherently superior one.
Well, it's like you said at the beginning too. It's the difference between argument being this functional kind of defense mechanism where you are actually protecting yourself against something. Now it's almost more like a sport, you know, and so that's certainly how people treat it online a lot of the time. I mean, it's definitely, you are trying to get that, I guess, dopamine release that comes from the satisfaction of feeling like you have won or you are right, you know, even if you aren't. And almost it benefits you to maybe ignore the fact that you're not right.
Right,
you
know? Yeah.
Ben, you said something in the video that I thought was fantastic. You were like, this idea of being right is addictive, and so much so that it is a drug, that the feeling of being right all the time would be such an all-encompassing feeling that you would want to chase and chase and chase. You said it would be like if you're Kanye West, like that feeling of everything I say, I believe is right. And it doesn't matter what anybody else says, I believe that this is right. Mm. And so it's just, I was trying to imagine what that would feel like. Yeah, just constantly.
You guys are both on point. We're getting to this very important thing here, that you can become physically addicted to this dopamine and adrenaline rush, dopamine triumph that occurs when you think, I am right.
Yeah, I'm not even listening to you.
The only metal is Cradle of Filth. Dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. I mean, it's a strange thing. And again, you know, I'm just mentioning Cradle of Filth or Metal for the sake of argument.
Yeah. I mean, we're all stars now in the Dopamine Show.
Oh,
were you saving that?
Wow. Thanks, Marilyn. Shout out to Marilyn Manson.
So when you argue, when your blood, your brain rather floods with these, different chemicals, and they even make you feel invincible. So the next time you're in a tense situation, your brain remembers, right? And your brain says, well, let's fight. We don't need to run, because if we run, we don't get the rush. You know, fight for the rush. Yet, let's say that all of us listening now, all of us on the show now, say that each of us has some sort of amazing revelation, and we are able to transcend these things. And we say, you know what, you guys, I'm sorry I was being such a piece of crap about it. It was cartoonish that I believed there was only one metal band in the world. And in retrospect, it's weird. And I appreciate you guys for being so honest with me and listening to me. I apologize. Let me take you guys out to the Dave and Buster's. Let's say that we were all capable of doing that. Well, there's still another problem, another reason that you may not be able to win arguments online, because your chances of finding an argument, finding a contradicting opinion, even if it's correct, are lowering at a continued rate. We're talking about something called the search bubble. So what is this?
This is a thing you may have noticed recently, and when you're just on Google or really any other search bar, or on Facebook or some other social media network that you use, what's getting supplied to you, to your feed or to your search results, is more and more, it's being customized for you, for what you've searched for in the past, for what you like on Facebook in particular, or what you buy even. A lot of times it's matched up with your credit cards, which is a little bit creepy. And it's happening because mostly advertisers want you to have what you want. And, you know, and that's getting into maybe even places where your news sources, the types of news sources on your newsfeed are going to be different.
Are you saying even non-sponsored posts, like just normal things that you like that come up in your feed, are reorganized and reordered based on your browsing behavior?
Yes.
That's really creepy.
That's why if you're signed into Google and you're on Chrome or something like that, your results are going to be different than if you're just not signed in anywhere and using Google Chrome on a different computer.
And here are how dramatic these differences can become. You can use search engines that strip some of the personalized information that Google uses. Mm-hmm. There's DuckDuckGo and Scroogle, and you'll see that the search results you get do differ.
Mm-hmm.
Almost regardless of what you look up.
Yeah, it scares me sometimes when I'll type in stuff somewhere on a computer and then stuff they don't want you to know shows. I'm like, yeah, awesome, man. Oh, wait.
So there's a TED Talk you can watch about this if you're interested in learning more by a fellow named Eli Pariser, the author of a book called The Filter Bubble. And he's talking about this personalized search. So, as they say in an excellent article on youarenotsosmart.com, the media of the future may be delivered based not only on your preferences, right? Whatever you looked up. Yes, even in incognito mode.
Yep.
It will also be based on your voting record, your medical records, where you grew up, your projected mood, the time of day, the time of year, maybe even information gleaned from your text message conversations, right?
Even public records.
Mm-hmm.
Like perhaps how much you make if you work in a public position.
Have you applied for a loan recently?
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting dental work? Why? Yeah. Did you make an unusual purchase?
And the biggest one, are you about to have or have already had a baby recently?
I don't know, man. Another big one that makes me uncomfortable is when I'm hanging out with a friend, and for some reason, it's almost always one of my female friends. And I see, like, wow, you have a lot of ads for engagement rings and diamonds. And that seems, to me, that seems so unfair, because we already live in a society that tolerates pushing people to do ritualistic things that maybe don't even apply in our society at this point. It's a form of, it is as if Hal from Space Odyssey 2001 decided to pester you to the point of bullying. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
I know. It's not the best, but hey, maybe it's all wrong, right, Noel? Maybe we can just, maybe we can be better. Maybe we can have rational discourse, throw off those old social dynamic rules. What do you think?
Maybe. I don't know. It's not a fair fight, though. You know, I mean, our odds just are pretty abysmal.
You don't think we can evolve past the physiological limits of the brain and break free of these algorithms that keep us from discovering things that may change our view of the world?
Because we're all made of star stuff, after all, you know.
I don't know. You're right. Maybe our odds don't look good. But I think there are older pieces of, I'll take a page from L. Ron Hubbard's book and call it cognitive technology. The Socratic method is an excellent way to explore differing opinions. Of course, it takes time. A lot of people don't have it. And a lot of people, when you're in an argument online, I don't know, listeners, if you ever played this game as kids where you were like, you had invisible guns. Do you remember this game?
Sure.
Like, we're going to pick two sides or whatever. So the thing that happens with that is, you know, like if we're playing this, if you're not in a family like yours, Matt, and you're playing with invisible guns, one thing you'll notice is a lot of people say, oh, I got you. And then someone's like, mm-hmm. No, you didn't.
Yes.
That's what internet argument is. It's imaginary bullets, weapons, and people are expecting to play the honor system on who got shot. So of course, I don't think it's going to work out, but these are things to keep in mind. And we would like to hear what you think about the strange ways in which our brains deceive us and force us to think that we are living in a different era. And the way in which one of the main conspirators in your quest for any factual thing, any truth, maybe an inside job, maybe the person in between your ears all along. And it's not your fault. These are processes older than civilization.
Yeah, we need to find a way to suppress the amygdala, Ben. But I feel like that's a terrible, that would be an awful world to live in. Ooh.
I don't know. I'm sure people have conducted experiments like that. You know, we do know that it does change brain function when you reduce electrical activity in one part of the brain, even using an external source like TDCS, mm-hmm. right? Which still is somehow, it's not illegal, right? But no one will sell me one.
I know.
I'm going to have to just build one.
We can do it.
I'm probably going to get myself brain damage, but I'm going to do it. Anyhow. Oh, and listeners, if you know of a TDCS device, please.
Send one our way.
Write to us. Send one our way. But before we go, it's time for some feedback and some listener mail.
Listener mail, listener mail. Now it's time for listener mail.
Listen up.
All right. So we had a lot of feedback from our political conspiracy episode, and we had some differing views that we wanted to share with everybody else listening. And there were also a couple things that I wanted to amend or corrections, which we're grateful for all of these. So Kelly M. wrote into us, and I'm going to read a portion of this letter because I want to take a look at this. Kelly's talking specifically about the part where I kind of went on a rant about my own personal opinion, which again, Noel, especially, thank you for pulling me off the back from the ledge on that one. So Kelly says she likes the show. I don't usually have a reason to write into podcasts, but something was said during this episode that frustrated me. I apologize if it was corrected later in the podcast. Felt the need to stop and write the email before finishing the podcast because I was afraid I'd forget if I waited. It was stated that there should be a law that if someone in your immediate family is in politics, you cannot hold the same or similar office. I think that's the gist of what was said. Correct me if I'm wrong. My problem with this is that the way it was discussed in the podcast was from a very white male viewpoint. Historically, those who hold political office have been white men, not in all parts of the world. But, you know,
certainly
U.S., Canada, Western Europe, for sure. So if the proposed law were an actual law in this country, it would disproportionately affect women who are seeking public office. it would be much more difficult for the goal of a 50-50 representation in the House, Senate, White House, etc. to actually happen. The women who are using familial connections to get into these positions of power are paving the way for other women who do not necessarily have these connections. While I agree with that family dynasties do not line up with the idea of America being a meritocracy, let's be real. Can we really call America a meritocracy anymore? And I thought, you know, that's just a piece of Kelly's letter, but we talked about this off air, and I wanted to bring this to the rest of our audience. You know, here's what I'm thinking. I'll reply to this directly because it is my opinion. It seems that the argument is that the evil of nepotism is a lesser evil in comparison to the greater evil of misogyny and prejudice against women in positions of power or equality, right? But the assumption I see here is that there's this idea that by virtue of being women, people who are women and are elected via nepotistic or elitist means will inherently or inevitably or necessarily help someone who is outside of that circle. I don't know. That's a lot like trickle-down economics. So while I see the opinion, I respect it. I'm a little more skeptical of how well that would work. But again, one of the things that everybody pointed out, including Matt and Noel on the podcast when I talked about this, and everybody in our YouTube comments were like, well, I see where you're going with this law, Ben, but there's no way to enforce it.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat of a moot point.
Well, and I slightly, after thinking about it for a long time, I slightly disagree with the law, but I was going to put forward one that you had talked about before that I think is even better.
What's that one?
Then instead of eliminating nepotism through familial means, I think we just eliminate the ability to hold office if you have ever been in a secret society.
Oh yeah, I remember that one. That was one of those three laws. What do you think of that, Noel?
I'm kind of on the fence, you know? Depends on how much weight you put behind the particular secret society.
And what is a secret society? Yeah.
Any society which is made secret from the public in membership and or in duty.
Hmm. Okay.
Seems fair.
I could go with that one. We have another slight correction here. I had said, and I think this was me, we had talked about the difficulty for felons to vote in the U.S. It is not true that no felons can ever vote in U.S. elections. It is true that it goes state by state. There are 11 states which do not allow felons to vote. However, there are two states that have unrestricted voting for felons. Those are Maine and Vermont, where felons can vote in prison.
Nice work, Vermont.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. And the person to help illuminate us, and hopefully you as well, listeners, with that slight correction is Drew Richards. So you get a shout out as well, Drew. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for checking out the show. And even more importantly, thanks for keeping us honest.
And one last mention here, I wanted to say thanks to Kelly D for putting us on to the Democracy Now! Episode called Dark Money. That's kind of a deep dive into the Koch brothers and where that money goes and super PACs and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was cool.
Great. Noel, you got anything else?
I think I'm good, guys.
All right. Well, we are going to head off and argue with each other the old school way in real life.
I'm already shaking my fist at you.
You are. And did you know there's...
And you, Matt.
No.
There's some evidence that shaking your fist in the sky like that or holding it in that Darth Vader pose increases pain tolerance. Story for another day.
Ooh, I'm going to try that out later today.
Try it out today and report back and let us know if it works.
Oh, you know, I do have one thing before we close.
What's that? Yeah.
We had Julie Douglas on a couple weeks ago or last week. Talk about the stuff of life, and the show has launched, and an episode that just came out today, the day that we're recording, rather, features you, Mr. Bolin, if anyone wants to.
That's true. I do a lot of things. Yeah.
I'm going to go listen to that right after this.
It gives you a little glimpse behind the Ben Bolin curtain.
Well, I will say, that I have a high opinion of Julie Douglas, and you and Julie have been working in concert on this show for quite a while, Stuff of Life.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an immersive podcast experience, you know?
So immerse yourselves. In the meantime, we are going to be researching some exciting new stuff, and we want to hear from you. So do you have an idea for something that we could cover in the future? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, where we are at Conspiracy Stuff. You do want to hop onto the Twitter sooner rather than later, because we may have, spoiler alert, some exciting things coming your way on that format. You can check out every podcast we have ever done at our website, stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com. And if that's not your bag, if you're opposed to the search bubbles and you like to minimize your time on the computer, we can send you our snail mail address if you want, or you can email us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.